will open the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2322, relating to the Construction Contractors Board. And we'll begin, and hopefully we will get enough quorum so we can go into a work session. Robin, do you want to share with us where we are?
Thank you.
Apologize for being a few minutes late. I've been sitting on a committee on the radon issue, and it's been very interesting, and I tried to get at an appropriate moment, so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So could you give me an extra copy of that? Thank you. The Construction Contractors Board and the Department of Justice have entered into an intergovernmental agreement on the issue of construction fraud, and with your permission, I'd like to have the Attorney General and the Chair of the Committee come forward and describe their agreement.
Okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Attorney General.
Morning,
pleased to have you here.
Chair Clarno and members of the committee, Sidney Brewster, public member and chair of the Construction Contractors Board. I'm just going to briefly introduce you to our plan, and then Attorney General Myers is going to run through it with you. I just want to say that we're very pleased at the Construction Contractors Board with this plan. It provides support for the board's desire to have sufficient funds to be tough on illegal activity in the construction industry. It represents a shared conviction between the agencies and the industry about how to handle that. In the wake of the failure of the unit which we had, the Interim Construction Fraud Evaluation Unit, to continue, and for some of its recommendations to be followed, Attorney General Myers and I came together and found that both of our agencies had a strong desire and a shared conviction about the need for strong deterrence and sanctioning of illegal activity, and that shared desire has resulted in the plan you see today. And it's not often that I'm able to come before a committee and have such pleasure in doing so. This represents a shared plan that was worked on by representative industry across the spectrum of the industry, the Department of Justice, and the Construction Contractors Board, and has full support of all those constituencies. So we're very pleased to bring it to you, and I'll now have Attorney General Myers run through it with you briefly.
Any questions of Sidney before we go ahead? Since you're the only member here. Hopefully some members are watching on TV and we'll get there shortly. Hopefully. Thank you, Sidney. Good morning, Mr. Attorney General.
Morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for your record, Hardy Myers, Attorney General. I too would like to express my appreciation to Sidney, to the board, and to the industry for their willingness to join the Department of Justice in the effort to develop this plan in the wake of the decision of the Assembly not to renew the unit that was created for this past this present interim's work. The plan is a fairly straightforward one. It would call for an increase in the expenditure limitation of the board in order to permit certain additional investments, and those are set out for you on the document that the fiscal office has provided you. $682,140, which would be invested in the way that's shown there, including $365,000 for DOJ civil enforcement, and also $55,000 for DA assistance, as well as $165,000 for enhanced board investigative capability, and about $96,540 for consumer education. On the DOJ side of this plan, from a budgetary standpoint, there is an expenditure limitation increase of $365,600 in the financial fraud consumer protection section of the department, and then an additional position authority of 2.25 FTE. That would include one senior assistant attorney general, investigator 3, and one administrative specialist 1, so as to be able to handle the projected increase in the referrals to the Department of Justice from CCB. And part of the plan includes targets for referrals, and as far as the DOJ referral piece of that is concerned, Madam Chair and members, the plan, and this is a attachment B of the handout you have, the plan projects up to 80 referrals to DOJ financial fraud consumer protection during the coming biennium. That would be we would be far short of capable of handling that kind of a referral increase without the additional position authority that's in the requested or recommended plan. Additionally, and very briefly, the plan also includes certain commitments between the two agencies. One is to work together to try to develop criteria for the screening of cases to identify those that are most appropriate for referral to the Department of Justice. Those would be to inform the CCB's judgment. They would not be binding, but they would be hopefully to provide some guidance to CCB, and the two agencies agree to work collaboratively to try to develop those criteria. But their application would be CCB's responsibility entirely.
Attorney General, Representative Butler.
Thank you. Attorney General Myers, so that I understand, then the intervention becomes part of the responsibility. The first contact or the referral, if you will, these 80 referrals basically come through the CCB to the Department of Justice then.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, yes. That's
okay. So that basically what happens is that you folks aren't trying to determine which are the bad actors by watching them drive by and construction pickups, as much as these folks are saying, we've determined who we think are the bad actors. Here are the list of them, and pass those folks down to you.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, yes, that's correct.
Good. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative Eden.
Mr. Attorney General, why wouldn't those complaints come directly from the citizens rather than from through some third party, such as the CCB?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, some complaints do come directly. Of course, most of the complaints that the board receives do come originally from individual citizens. Some will come to the Department of Justice and be referred over to the board for initial evaluation. So they could come directly to the board, or they could come indirectly through DOJ or perhaps some other agency. And it would then fall to the board to determine whether the matter is appropriately be processed solely as a claim, that is, as a civil contractual dispute with no law violation asserted or possible, or to process it as a matter involving both a claim and a possible law violation, or to process it as a matter involving only a possible law violation. They can fall into three different categories, and the board is responsible for making the initial assessments as to which channel the particular matter should go into. And then from among those cases that are either partly a possible law violation or solely a possible law violation, the board, working with the screening criteria that we're going to develop, will determine which cases should go to DOJ. And in fact, which some cases will go to local law enforcement, including district attorneys.
Mr. Attorney General, why would that be some third party's decision? Why wouldn't the interested citizens and their attorneys work directly with local district attorneys or the State Department of Justice? Wouldn't it be up to them to decide what they wanted to pursue? If they wanted arbitration, or if they wanted some third party to make the decision as to whether they had a claim or not, then they would go to that person. But if they felt they had a claim, why wouldn't they go directly to a district attorney?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I don't suppose anything would preclude a citizen from doing so. And, of course, in civil cases, there may be a contract in place that has certain dispute resolution provisions in it, which the citizen would seek to invoke without necessarily involving the board. I suppose it's going to be a case-by-case situation. But, of course, through the board, you can access the bond of the contractor if the contractor is licensed. So there's a remedial structure that the board controls that I don't believe a citizen can invoke directly. It's going to have to go through the board.
Just to clarify, there's nothing in this that precludes other actions. This simply deals with the referral that will be made by the Construction Contractors Board to the Attorney General based on the criteria that they're going to establish that indicates something other than, something that could rise to the level of civil action by the Department of Justice or criminal action by a DA, but it will be what flows through the Construction Contractors Board and will be referrals from them. Citizens still can go directly to the Department of Justice or they can file a complaint through other processes. This simply has to do with the, the complaints that are filed with the Construction Contractors Board.
If they are filed in that venue, but
right,
but
exactly.
that is not a jurisdiction that can decide whether or not a claim can be pursued. Citizens have the right to pursue it through other channels,
yes,
at their own, on their own authority.
Yes.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Madam Chair, I just make the comment that as I look down this list of expenditures, I see that through the assessment being set aside for the department or within the Construction Contractors Board limitation, we're talking about the transfer of the $365,600 is being made, but also note that the investigators are being taken care of at the Construction Contractors Board. This, I think, fulfills in part what the work group was encouraging, as well as consumer education, and I think that's important. It'll be interesting to see how all that is implemented, and then finally some small amount of district attorney assistance for an amount that would be needed there to assist with exactly what Representative Hayden was concerned about, the additional workload that would be heaped upon our district attorneys.
In reference to what Representative Butler just said, the parties, the Department of Justice, the Construction Contractors Board, and lobbyists from the industry have agreed to this attached budget note that details the reporting that will occur based on this agreement. And that has been approved by the co-chairs. It's on the back side of my memo.
Senator Dukes. Didn't we just pass this bill the other day on this one?
Yes.
So it's been through the House and it's been through the Senate?
Madam Chair.
And now we're redoing it?
No, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ways and Means asked to have this specific bill to do the expenditure limitation in, mm-hmm, because it closes the loop on the responsibility for dealing with some this bill amends the statute to eliminate the requirement that was in statute that there be a construction fraud unit in the state police, which didn't work particularly well. And so now we have an intergovernmental agreement to deal with that. We wanted to put the expenditure limitation in that bill and close the loop so that it's very clear that the state isn't walking away from the construction fraud issue with the change in the statute. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the bill has been through both houses.
Well, I was just thinking, I don't know that I've ever seen a situation before where we had a bill go through the House and the Senate and have that in one form and have that complete vote and then bring it to a non-substantive committee and change it substantially. So that was a surprise to me. Process-wise,
it is somewhat unusual, yes.
Yeah,
but in that bill, we had not dealt with what was to be then approximately, at that point, was about $600,000 that was set aside for this fraud investigation unit, and we had not dealt with that.
Oh, I know all of that. Where does this bill go? Back through the House and the Senate? Okay,
yes.
That's at least somewhat helpful. And I'm curious, we have dollars. Do we know what we base those dollars on? How prevalent is this? I remember some testimony when CCB was before us about the state police thing about the mob was in it, and we went, our investigations at that level were based on people we believed were engaged in mob activity. And I remember not only being a little surprised at that, but there could be lots of things going on I don't know about. How many of these do we believe we've had in the last 5 years, and, or what do we base these numbers on?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Dukes, I think that what might be most helpful is if you look at Attachment B to our plan that we have worked on jointly, you'll see what we project as the number of cases that would be handled by these budget dollars. This is our best estimate based on past experience. And so I think that that would be most helpful. I'm not sure that I can address your question about the last 5 years adequately, but I think...
So we have 101, I see, as a total projected number of cases. And do you know, is that a biennium?
Yes.
101 cases that we would... These wouldn't all be sent on. These...
They're broken out by the type of sanction that we believe would be needed for those 101 cases, whether it's a license revocation or whether it's a criminal prosecution. They're broken out so you can see that the bulk would be UTPA, civil UTPA sanctions, and then the criminal penalties are those at the very bottom under unlicensed theft and racketeering. So as far as your question about the mob, I guess that fits best into
racketeering,
which we want.
So are we saying that we would expect that in the next biennium there would be about 15 cases that would be sent over to the Department of Justice?
You go ahead, Hardy. Okay. No, that would also include the civil UTPA. Madam Chair and Senator Dukes, that's B on our Unlawful Trade Practices Act. I'm sorry. There I went and blew my commitment to not use acronyms. That would also be sent over to DOJ and handled by them.
So about 75 of them. Is that a year or a biennium? 80. They moved up. Okay, is that a year or a biennium?
This is all a biennium, Madam Chair, Senator Dukes.
And right now, what are we doing with those? Just taking their license away from them?
Well, currently, we've been involved in the Interim Construction Fraud Evaluation Unit. We've also, prior to that, been involved in the Construction Fraud Unit with the Oregon State Police. And so some of what we're looking at here represents a model that was used prior to both of those units, where the Department of Justice was our attorney, and we worked on joint investigations and sanctions against unlawful activity, and that's what we're looking at doing again is precisely that model. We're working more closely and collaboratively on screening criteria to decide what would be sent over to Department of Justice.
There's money in here for education for the Construction Contractors Board. What do you envision that entailing? I looked at, remember looking at the performance measures for the board when
the
budget was in front of us and the education piece was attached. So I was wondering how we're going to do this.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, this the best thing to answer your questions about that is the back page right behind the chart that I just referred you to. We have what we think is a good summary of what we would plan to do in the way of consumer education to let them know where to go and how to address issues with construction. And that should give you an idea of what we're planning to do with these budget dollars, I hope. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, also with regard to the performance of evaluation, if you recall, there's a budget note in the department's budget that instructs them to work with the Progress Board and with other folks to come up with performance measures and report them to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, and they will be doing that. And that will include activities that arise as a result of this agreement as well as other activities.
Well, this is much better than what we got with the budget, because there it appeared that what we were doing was notifying those people who had already filed complaints. And then you were pleased that most of them knew how to get a hold of you. So I guess that somehow didn't didn't seem sufficient.
Madam Chair, Senator, this also represents, the dollars that we have placed before you also represent a collaboration between DOJ, Department of Justice, and Construction Contractors Board to effectively educate consumers.
I noticed that Hardy had some money in his budget too, but I know he knows how to educate the public, so I wasn't worried about him.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Duke. Any further questions? If not, thank you both very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for your time, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Madam Chair, just for the record, we know at this point that the industry is on board with the CCB at this point.
That's my understanding. Mr. Berry or anyone else has something they'd like to say?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jessica Harris. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. Yes, we do support this agreement. We believe it achieves the goals of prosecuting those that deserve prosecution, but additionally retaining with the CCB the responsibility to police the industry. Madam Chair, if I may offer an additional amendment.
Madam Chair, before any amendments can be admitted in Ways and Means Committees, they have to be approved by the co-chairs, and we do not have permission to adopt any other amendments.
Oh, wait a minute, Madam Chair. This is still a democracy. You can still submit amendments. We don't have to accept them. We don't have to adopt them, but they who can still submit them to a committee for due consideration.
Well, the committee will look at them if you'd like to pass them around, but we went through this the other day on another committee and have to have the signature of the chair that the bill originally came from, but we'll be happy to look at them.
And that's all fine.
That you don't adopt fiscal amendments that have not had a chance to be.
Well, and that's all fine, too. I just don't want anybody saying that we can't even submit them.
I may explain the amendment briefly. This is not a fiscal amendment. This is a technical amendment to fix a problem with another bill relating to liens that is on the governor's desk. This is an amendment that the chair of rules has said where the bill came from last, has said that he is fine with, he doesn't care as long as there's no disagreement. We have checked with the other members of the industry and with the CCB, and they are fine. What this bill basically does, the bill, House Bill 3842, that is on the governor's desk to be signed, the bill requires that individuals who are selling a house or who are selling a commercial office building or who are developers who will be selling a home to a consumer give all pieces of information relating to lien and lien release forms that they have had for the past 2 years, that they turn those over to the new owner on the effective day of the act. These pieces of paper are often thrown away because they sometimes have substantive meaning, sometimes they do not. My concern is, and the concern of others, is that individuals who did not know that they needed to turn those pieces of paper over in the past 2 years may be subject to a Class B misdemeanor if they are not, if this amendment is not passed. And what this amendment does is it says, turn over those lien release forms that you've received after the effective date. It in essence gives them cover if they've thrown them away January 1 of 2000.
Thank you, Jessica. Any questions, Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jessica, you're a very sophisticated lobbyist. How come these amendments didn't get addressed as a bill made its way through the process and now sits on the governor's desk?
Chair Clarno, Representative Johnson, quite frankly, the bill moved faster and moved when we didn't necessarily intend it to. It got through. We missed it. We made an error, and I take responsibility for that error. I apologize to this community that we're at this late date trying to fix this problem. My concern is for a homeowner who's had major renovation done on their property, or for one of my contractors who didn't keep paper that they should have kept, now being potentially subject to a Class B misdemeanor for something that is now law that they didn't know was law back then.
Have you approached the governor's staff about this? or made any attempts, is this your last point of rectification of an oversight?
Chair Clarno, Representative Johnson, yes, this is the last point. This is a bill that has the right relating to clause that we can fix this problem in. There have been discussions with the governor's office on this issue, not by me, but by the CCB, and it is our understanding that with this fix, that bill is going to be signed whether or not this fix occurs. That bill, as it sits today, is not written exactly as it was intended to be written by the sponsor. It is the intention of the industry and the CCB to fix that bill in the interim. This amendment fixes a problem that will potentially keep people held harmless for the next 2 years so that we can come back and make the bill work right.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, I understood Ms. Lamont very clearly when she explained the process. I'm just curious at this point to understand a little bit more about this amendment. Would you be willing to allow CCB representatives to respond to this?
Certainly.
Can I ask a question? I don't care who answers it.
Yes, Senator Duke.
What's the significance of the wording within the past 2 years that's being deleted?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, basically what the word the last 2 years means is that when the bill goes into effect, either July 1st of 2001 or January 1st of 2002, basically you would have to turn over all lien, potential right to lien notices and lien release forms that you've had since either January 1 of 2000 or July 1 of 1999. If you have not kept those forms for the last 2 years, you are potentially subject to the penalties, which is a Class B misdemeanor and prosecution under that statute. The problem is people don't necessarily keep those. What this bill would say is, look, you're only subject to turnover forms that you've received after the effective date of this act. When we fix the bill 2 years from now, we will set it so that it's from the past 2 years since the passage of this 2001 Act, in addition to some other technical changes that need to occur with the legislation that is. The bill will work fine as it is for the next 2 years. This prevents people from being subject to prosecution under that section of statute for pieces of paper they didn't keep.
So this doesn't exist today?
This does not exist today.
I mean the whole piece.
The whole
They're not required to keep them
no.
or anything like that.
No.
And this applies only to the contractor, not to an individual who may own a home and be selling it?
If an individual owns a home and they've had major renovation done on the home and they've hired subcontractors to do that, that individual needs to turn over those lien release forms because they're the one who is the owner selling the home. It's anybody who owns a piece of property who's selling it needs to turn over those forms. If the homeowner hasn't kept them, or because they paid their bills, they threw them away, it doesn't matter. You still have to turn that piece of paper over.
I just have one question. I'm not being a lawyer, Madam Chair, and this whole issue being new to me, I'm reading where you're inserting this Section 3, and it appears that this goes in Section 701 of the Oregon Revised Statutes. And that being the case, is that correct, Jessica?
Yes.
That's relative to criminal penalties under the construction contractors, and so this would be this starts talking about an owner. If an owner of record sells real property to a purchaser, the owner shall provide the purchaser these various releases and so forth. Including the copy of the notice of lien and so forth and so on, after the effective date of this 2001 Act, and that looks like to me that affects not just construction contractors, but that's everyone who owns real property within the state. Real estate salespeople would have to come to the 701-990. In order to determine what their responsibility would be as they represent someone in the sale of a piece of real property to a purchaser. Is that correct?
Chair Clarno, Representative Butler, yes it is, and that's where, you know, I'm here to protect my clients, your major construction contractors on commercial work. But beyond the responsibility for me to protect them, I'm concerned additionally, just as a citizen of the state, that we're going to be impacting just homeowners who make major renovations or even slight renovations on their home that they don't do themselves, that they hire somebody to do, give potential right to lien notice, and don't keep it and don't turn it over. So the answer is yes, that does apply to everyone. It was meant to, that I'm speaking for the sponsor here, he meant to impact people who do residential development. The bill was not written in a way that impacts residential developers. It impacts everyone. And that debate on whether it applies to everyone will occur this interim, and we'll bring another bill back to address this issue next session. My concern is ensuring that homeowners and, quite frankly, my contractors who didn't keep pieces of paper aren't subject to prosecution under the statute.
You mentioned the sponsor of the bill. Who's that?
Representative Merkley.
Have you not tried a priority bill to get this issue addressed in the legislative process?
Chair Carno, no, we have not. We were hopeful that we could address this issue in this bill.
Have you worked with all parties concerned prior to bringing this amendment to us?
Chair Carno, yes, we have. Representative Merkley has signed off on this amendment and believes it will do.
So I mean the parties that affect this bill, the real estate lobbyists, the other people that are involved. Have you worked with everyone that's on this work group?
Chair Carno, yes, we have.
Who was it, legislative council that drafted the amendment, and who, do we know who authorized that?
Chair Clarno.
The legislative council drafted. You hear it, Representative Haynes?
Kirsten Conley was the drafter on this amendment, and it was authorized by Senate rules when it was before the Rules Committee, and the Rules Chair wanted to get this down as quickly as possible to hear. He has signed off on this amendment, says he doesn't care as long as there's no one opposed. We have worked with all parties. Everyone is not opposed.
I don't understand. When you say it was authorized by Senate rules, you mean the chairman of the Senate Rules Committee?
It was authorized by Marjorie Taylor with Senate rules to have this amendment drafted.
Staff can draft.
I can go start. Okay, I think we have a bit of a problem with this.
Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Can I give a refresher course on rules of ways and means? Typically what we do is the co-chairs approve amendments prior to submission to subcommittee. And because the co-chairs have not seen this amendment, we would ask the committee to defer this amendment this time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Robin, would you explain the amendments that we have before us, the Dash 9?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 9 amendment established an other funds expenditure limitation of $365,600 for the Department of Justice and an other funds expenditure limitation of $682,140 for the Construction Contractors Board. In addition, LFO is recommending that the subcommittee approve
three
positions and 2.25 FTE.
Thank you. Any discussion or questions about the Dash 9 amendment?
Madam Chair, are we going to vote now on the amendment?
Yes, I did open
up the budget note.
No, we'll go ahead and do the...
Madam Chair, I was moved.
Yes, I opened the public hearing and work session, and we need to do the Dash 9, and then we'll do the rest of the LFO recommendations.
And Chair, relative to the proffered amendment, that's the Dash 9 amendment.
A9 amendments, right.
And the legislative fiscal recommendation, I move that we adopt the Dash A9 legislative fiscal recommendation.
We heard Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hagen.
In the absence of a larger number of people here, I will give a courtesy vote. However, I have concerns about the bill, about removing the law enforcement from it and turning the police activities over to a, board.
I understand. And
I want to investigate that further before I vote in full committee or on the floor on this.
Thank you, and I appreciate your courtesy vote. Any other discussion? Any objection to the dash A9 amendments being adopted? Not so ordered. Robin?
Madam Chair, members, recommend that you approve the attached budget note. As I indicated earlier, this was worked out between the board and Department of Justice and the construction lobby, related to the data that will be collected and reported on the intergovernmental agreement that exists.
And does everyone have that budget note in front of them so that we all?
It is on the reverse of my memo. Thank you.
Chair, having received the budget note, together with the other information from the legislative fiscal office, I only just have one question, and that is that the 2.25, as we go of these additional FTEs, are they limited duration?
No, it was not, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, it was not our intent to establish them as limited duration positions. We will, however, have to revisit this as part of the budget process.
Okay. My only concern was that what we're doing is that we are now coming back and asking for the return on the report, and we won't know the effectiveness of the 2.25 FTE that are involved here until we really get that information. And I was hoping that maybe that in that visitation that they would not be made permanent positions until.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, given the level of staffing that we are looking to hire to do this, it's not recommended that we make a limited duration. We're looking for an attorney and an investigator position, and you will have the information about the effectiveness of this before you go into the next legislative session. So you will be able to revisit the issue and not effective action. Because if you look at what is required under the budget note, they are required to report, or they have agreed to report, November 1 of 2001, and that will be simply a preliminary report on, you know, how they have begun organizing things, and then another report, November 1, 2002, just prior to the next legislative session. So.
It's a rather substantial roll-up cost then in that process, I would think, too.
Not substantial, Representative Butler, because this would be for a full biennium.
It does cover the full biennium. Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dukes. I agree with Representative Butler, and I guess what I'm looking for here is how do we make sure this comes up? If it's limited duration, they always come up with an option package, so you know you're going to see them again. If they're permanent, staff must have some way of making sure they come up again, because in the normal course of events, it wouldn't, unless somebody did something to make sure it came up next.
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, the November 2002 report in and of itself will be a trigger, but because this is an intergovernmental agreement and because there is a pass-through of funds to the Department of Justice, we will have to look at both of those going into the next legislative session.
Representative Johnson.
This is a, forgive this question. This is the vaguest budget note that I've.
I think you've got the one that the staff referred to is right behind the first page, right here.
The one that does not say budget note.
Yeah, it doesn't say budget note, but it, that is it. I think that
So the budget note is not the one that starts out notwithstanding the cooperative enforcement.
That is the second page of the fiscal impact statement. I apologize.
Okay, I just got that was the weirdest budget note I've ever.
I'm sorry.
Madam
Chair, Representative Johnson, the back of my memo.
Okay, it wasn't identified in any way, and when you said it was on the back of the memo, just the way that it's in here, I'm sorry.
It really was a strange question.
It was a clarification.
Yeah,
clarifying question.
Thank you.
LFO was requested not to make any modifications to this budget note, and so therefore I copied exactly what was given to the legislative fiscal office.
So when she said it was a strange budget note, she wasn't impugning you at all.
Not at all. That's nothing.
No, when they said it was on the back of the memo, I picked up this other, the other memo, and picked up what now is the end of the fiscal report, believing it was the budget note. I'm with you now, and it looks fine.
Chair, I move legislative fiscal office recommendation relative to the budget note to be appended to this document.
We've heard Representative Butler's motion. Any further discussion? Any objections? If not, so moved. What do we else do?
Madam Chair, I need a motion to move House Bill 2322 with the A2 amendments to the full Ways and Means Committee with the due pass
recommendation.
Madam Chair, are you ready to move that motion?
I move this as amended with the A9 amendments, House Bill 2322A, to the full committee will do pass recommendation.
Any discussion?
Madam Chair, question. It's my understanding then that, and we're having some interesting motions. Last week we had a motion to refer to the two co-chairs, which sort of stopped me in my tracks. It's my understanding that this will procedurally now go to the full Ways and Means Committee. If it does pass, it will then go to the first to the House bill, being a House bill.
Since it has, and I'm not exactly sure, but I believe that since it has just come through the Senate, that it would go back to the Senate for concurrence with the amendments that were made, and then back to the House.
These will be These will be listed on the daily schedule as concurrence amendments. And
I'm not sure.
But it will go through both bodies again.
Right.
Okay. That's my understanding as
Thank
well.
Madam Chair, how did it get here?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, we asked to have it sent here.
Asked who? I mean, this is a bill that has passed the House and the Senate.
We asked.
Without a referral to Ways and Means along the way, and it wasn't referred off the floor.
We asked that it be referred to, and perhaps you're right, it may not have been to the Senate floor yet.
Well, I just remember reading the right. summary, so, and I don't do that till they get to the floor, so that's why I thought maybe it had been there.
And I'm not sure. I apologize. I didn't know that, but we asked to have it referred.
I think if you don't remember carrying it, and I didn't carry it.
No, but it wasn't a Ways and Means bill.
That's
it's
true.
Never been
that's
a Ways and Means. Just out of curiosity, and I don't mean to hold things up, but a curiosity from the process, I'd like to know how we got it. And it doesn't have to happen right now, but
Madam Chair, and
I mean, I know things happen, and I know we have all powerful co-chairs.
The Legislative Fiscal Office requested that the bill be referred to Ways and Means for the purposes of adding these fiscal amendments.
And I know it can get referred by the President or the Speaker. I know it can get referred off the floor.
Right.
And I know that a substantive committee can ask the President or the Speaker
and they
to
did.
Refer.
And they did. And it was referred by the Senate President.
Well, I guess I need to just find out whether or not we passed it in the Senate. Perhaps we didn't.
I think
do
maybe
that.
You didn't.
That would make my
You're right,
easier.
So it wasn't Ways and Means. So
it was not a Ways and Means.
Someone else would have. Any further discussion? And I think probably Senator Duke's question would be something the next time you're before, share with us how this all happened so we'll all be educated
yeah,
on it.
I thought I did, but I will get you the
But
impact.
I'm making an assumption that may not be correct. Because we saw it on the floor doesn't mean we passed it. They get held over, they get moved, they get all kinds of things.
Right.
We have a motion before us. Any objections? If not, ordered. And carriers. Representative Butler, thank you very much. To full and in the House?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
And then,
I'm sure you want this one, don't you?
Okay. I don't want to put you on the spot here. I know you'd say, I'll do it if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
I got it.
That's true.
Okay, we'll close the, let's see, we do not have time to go into the other bill. Is that correct? We do not have time to go into the other bill.
TV starting with?
Start to 10, we can do it in about 2 minutes.
Let me ask the chair of the next committee if that's okay if we proceed. Are you, do you need something to do in between?
I don't have a problem with it, Madam Chair. I was figuring to go from one committee right into the next, so.
And by the way, I do want to thank Representative Butler for his work on this issue with all the parties involved trying to get this together and the rest of whoever was in that work group. I thank you very much. Okay, we'll close the public hearing and work session on 5023-22 and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 5032 relating to miscellaneous boards, councils, and agencies. Steve, Dallas.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 5032 is a fee bill for various state agencies under the Senate Bill 333. Agencies that are allowed to administratively adopt fees have to come and get approved through statute for them to continue on the next biennium. During the drafting of legislation, a number of different agencies' fees were included in House Bill 5032. They have subsequently been moved to the various subject matter committees that heard the budgets. So we have proposed, and our recommendations are essentially to remove all of the other fees there so that what would remain would be fees that have previously been reviewed for the State Board of Tax Service Examiners, the Board of Accountancy, and the Public Employees Retirement System. Those would be the three remaining fees in this bill. The draft amendment and in the legislative drafting process, they seem to have combined for the Board of Accountancy two separate fees in one line. It said licensing fees for individuals on line 23 of the first of page one. And because of the impact, it was just $150, so we are suggesting a technical amendment to that section. It doesn't change any of the fees that have been adopted. It just makes it clearer. So we have, this is the housekeeping bills. It's, all the fees have been reviewed in prior budgets in this subcommittee, and this will remove all the budgets that have been heard in other subcommittees or are being heard in other subcommittees.
Thank you, Dallas. Questions, discussion? Yes,
Senator. I actually have a question if he's willing to yield of Representative Butler. The chair of the committee, the transportation stuff goes through. We have a fee here for web page advertising. Is ODOT now taking advertising on their web page?
That's State Board of Tax Service Examiners.
Okay, is the State Board of Tax Service Examiner, is somebody not accepting advertising on their web page?
We got to defer that. We've got this Pam Constantopoulos here. She'd probably tell us.
That's an interesting policy change, I would say.
Good morning, Pam. I'm just going to call you Pam, if you forgive me. Representative Butler is very capable with your last name, but I'm not going to try to even work with it at all. So if it's all right, I'll call you Pam. Good morning.
Chair Cardinal, that's fine. Good morning. For the record, my name is Pamela Constantopoulos, and I'm the director of the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners. The internet advertising fee came about because there was some discussion about listing our licensees on our web page as a means for consumers to find qualified tax professionals. There was an outcry of the public, certain members of the public, that said that they didn't want their name to be listed on the web page, and so that brought us to the point some people do and some people don't. In order to separate those out, then we added a small service fee for that.
It comes back to my mind now.
We're not
going to
see big advertisements on the web page.
Shop here.
Fast service, yeah.
Okay. Good point of clarification, Senator. Any further discussion on any of these fees before us?
I just say this, Madam Chair. It certainly appears that the increase in the fees of the Board of Tax Services Examiners is reasonable in relationship to that of the Board of Accountancy.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move that we accept the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal Office relative to House Bill 5032 as engrossed.
We've heard the motion before us. Any discussion?
Well, discussion. I don't want the answer now because nobody here has it, but I'm curious how you can evaluate a private tollway proposal for $40,000. I think that's a good bargain.
That's in another thing, committee. We're amending that out of this one.
I know.
But it will go into another bill, so.
And my second question would be, are there any such proposals? I remember one from 10 years ago, but. I don't expect an answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mine's just a curiosity. Where some of the kind of odd numbers come from? $178 for a residential-only contractor license renewal?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, that was in the construction contractors board, and I did not have that answer.
I was just curious whether or not that was something that you routinely saw, that whether it was it's done proportionally or it's done, it doesn't matter. I was just curious.
Which one was that? I'm sorry.
Oh, I just happened to, my eye landed on it looking in the bill. It was on page 2, line 4.
Uh-huh. I have a question.
Representative Hayden.
Not completely facetious. If you misspell a department name, like on page 3, line 8, does that void the whole bill?
I'm sorry.
Page 3, line 8, one-day permit.
Page 3, line 5.
Oh, line 5, Department of Transportation, parking.
Oh, yeah.
Transportation. We are amending that out.
Well, that is a good sense of misspelling.
Well, that'll work.
Somebody should hire you for free.
If you look on staff recommendation, it's delete lines 5 through 16 on page 3.
Well, I guess we should.
I don't want to rush everyone. Have they had a chance to thoroughly look at what we're doing here?
If you don't take the vote, we're going to just pick this thing to death.
Well,
you might want to move it.
Okay, well, we put the motion before us to accept the amendments as proposed by, or the changes as proposed by LFO. You did make that motion.
Yes, I did.
Any objections? Not so ordered. Representative Butler?
Madam Chair, I move the House Bill 5032 as amended now to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Butler's motion. Any discussion?
Where does it say we're amending these fees out?
On the amendment?
On staff.
On the staff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Any objection? Moving to the full. Not so ordered. And Representative Butler, since this has a lot of things that have to do with figures and numbers, such as appreciate you carrying that.
To the Senate.
Senator Dukes will carry in the Senate. And you carry the House and the floor.
Yes.
Thank you, committee, for your good work this morning, your attentive questions and interest. Thank you very much. I don't know if we have anything scheduled for tomorrow.
Not yet, but
it may. It may, and it may be 8, and we know we're working Saturday, and we don't have the schedules yet for that, do we?
My understanding is that there are bills assigned, and staff will work with the chairs to set the schedule.
Okay. And then as soon as the chair knows, I have a graduation. I was going to in Redmond. I think we all have something, which is unfortunate, but we've paid so well here that we just have to.
That's right.
After all,
this would be
our duty and responsibility,
right?
Is there regardless of pay, right?
I need to discuss that with you.
Well, after Senator Hannan came in the other day and made some statement about 65 cents an hour, I couldn't help but joke about that.
Yeah, we should talk about the fact that we're not union here.
Yeah. And anyway, we may have something tomorrow at 8 a.m. We don't know. Mm-hmm. So as soon as the. Oh,
Tomorrow's Friday.
I'll be there.
Flag Day. Happy Flag Day to everyone.
Oh, yes.
Thank you very much.
We are adjourned. Means we're going to have to deal with that to change that.